Thanks for listening to the best of the Odd Couple podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, 4 to 7 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Odd Couple at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
You're listening to the best of the Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker.
Big NBA matchup tonight. A lot of things are kind of winding down. It's like about less than 10 games in the NBA season. And probably the most hot thing going is the MVP race.
I tell you what, Rob, I've been a voter for the postseason NBA awards for about 20 years, roughly. And this might be the closest MVP race that I can remember. Steve Nash's second MVP, I believe, was very close. I think that's the one he got over Shaq. But Shaq had missed about 13 games or something like that, so that made it a little easier. But this is as close as it gets. And I am going to hold out. I'm going to give myself the right to change my mind.
No.
Listen. Until I make my official vote. If I want. Now, I don't think anything's going to happen in the next 10 days that's going to change my mind, but I reserve that right. But right now, Rob, if I had to turn in my vote right now, it would be for Giannis Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee. Bless you. I'm surprised you didn't say
that. No, I let it go.
Okay, good, good. And here's why. Both of them have spectacular numbers. We know that. James Harden, what, 31 straight games of 30 or more points. Leading the league with 36 points a game and still giving you 7 dimes and 6 rebounds. I'm not going to be mad if James Harden wins the award. You won't hear a peep out of me.
You're not going to do a Sean Payton?
No.
Okay.
And Giannis Antetokounmpo, 27 points, 12 and a half, 12.7 to be exact, rebounds a game and 6 assists. Only one player in NBA history has ever averaged 27, 12, and 6 at least. And that is Oscar Robertson, who did it once in the year 1962 when he averaged a triple-double. So both of them are putting up historic numbers offensively. Here are two things I'm going to give you that are tipping the scales for Giannis in my mind. Number one, defense. You play both sides of the floor in the NBA. And Harden has improved really greatly on the defensive end. He's up there in steals, 2.2 a game. I mean, he's not the Ole defender that he used to be. He's not the turnstile defender that he was earlier in his career when people were mocking him with all those memes and videos and all that. He's not a horrible defender anymore. He tries. But Giannis is arguably the best defender in the NBA. Giannis is ranked first in the league in defensive rating individually. His team is ranked first in the league defensively. He's ranked second in the league in defensive win shares. Harden, 68th in the league in defensive rating, 145th in win shares defensively. So when I look at the defensive contributions, both of them are lighting it up offensively. I got to give Giannis the nod because he's getting it done at the highest level on both ends of the floor. The second thing, Rob, and then you can weigh in. And I know I'm not saying this to usurp your point or anything like that. But I know where you're going to go because that's where everybody's going. Houston was dead in the water. 4-7, 11-14, 13-14 before James Harden went off on his 30-point scoring sprees. I get that. But James Harden was around. He played every game when they were dead in the water. Why should I punish Giannis Antetokounmpo that he never let his team be dead in the water? James Harden let them go for 2 months playing bad basketball, and then he rescued them. Giannis has never let his team play bad basketball this entire season. He and his team, he's carried his team to greatness for all 5 months of the season. Harden, who's been great the whole season, but has only carried his team to greatness for 3 months. So I'm not going to punish Giannis because he never let his team get in a hole. He never let his team get 5-6 games below 500. So I'm with Giannis for those two reasons mainly. There are others I could bring up. And look, like I said, this is nothing against Harden because he's been great. But that's why Giannis gives my vote.
You done?
Yeah.
Okay.
You got something to say?
Yeah, I got plenty to say.
I thought I was going to leave you speechless.
No, not at all. I mean, it's so clear, and I'm not trying to Giannis has had a great season, and I'm not taking anything. Milwaukee, what they've done, I get all that. So I'm not trying to act as if he hadn't done anything. He's had an unbelievable season.
Let me ask you this. Will you think it's robbery if he gets it over Harden?
Yes.
Wow.
And from this standpoint, what Harden has been able to do is incredible. Here's he's averaging 36.4 points, right? As a reigning MVP, which is the highest scoring average in the NBA since 1986-1987. I guess, who would that be? Would that be Michael Jordan at 37.1? So this is how long before somebody has been able to average this many points in this man's league, which is an incredible accomplishment. So just talk about his numbers, what he's been able to do. That is very, very impressive. Number two, you're right, Chris. Defensively, Harden has gotten better. He leads the league in deflections, which just means that defensively, he's more active, right? At going for balls and doing stuff. So he's not doing the Olay.
No, I totally agree.
You don't lead the league in deflections by not really making an effort to try to get the ball.
But is he in Giannis's class?
Can I keep talking? let me finish my case. And I get it. You could say, you know, this is the argument that people make all the time about Tom Brady's comeback wins. Oh, Tom Brady has more. Well, why did your team, Aaron Rodgers didn't have as many comeback wins? Because Aaron Rodgers' team is in front. They're not coming from behind. They're not down by two scores. So if you're going to use that argument here on how Giannis didn't have to bring his team back because he was already ahead.
I don't use that argument.
I'm just saying, don't you use that next football season.
Don't let me
you
hear
you.
You
better not use
that. All right,
that.
So are you going to use this now?
Absolutely.
How you going to use it now?
No, because I'm
don't
saying.
Don't bring up Aaron. Oh, Aaron Rodgers
no,
is never behind.
I'm
That's
just
why
saying.
All right, same
in the
for
case
you. Good
where,
for the goose.
In the case where this Rocket team was dead and they had major injuries. Chris Paul, Capella, they were
Chris
out.
Chris was healthy during
no,
that
but they were
when
out,
they were
okay?
struggling.
They were, but I'm saying these guys wind up going down. And here's the other thing. He scored 30-plus in 32 games. In those 32 games, the Rockets went 22-11. It wasn't like he was just putting up numbers and they weren't winning. And in those 32 games, he averaged 41.1 points, shot 44% from the field, including 37.1% from three. Those are astronomical, incredible numbers. That team is now, that was left for dead, when he put them on their back and weathered the storm before everybody got back and they got there, now they're third in the Western Conference, ready to make another run in this playoffs. I'm telling you, what he's been able to do and some of the marks that he's been able to set, especially during a time when the injuries, and he was their only weapon, the only thing, teams could have just said, we won't let Harden beat you, and he still was able to beat you. That tells me how strong his season and his numbers are. They're not empty numbers. They're real numbers. They won. He won when they had injuries. He won when people thought that this team was left for dead. This is why I look at it. And Giannis had his team. They were good. I get where they moved forward in the East and all that. And it's a tremendous
Does
season.
Does Giannis have a star teammate?
The difference is playing in the West. And here's my other point. LeBron James,
they're
all the numbers
the
that
West.
You talk
they're
about,
18-9
LeBron,
the West.
LeBron's numbers, which you rave about, 27-8-8, and they're not making the playoffs.
What's
that tells
got
you.
To do? What has
no,
LeBron got to do with this argument?
Because it tells you about Harden's numbers are real. They're not hollow.
And Giannis's aren't?
No. Playing in the West, LeBron has got a dose of reality that those numbers didn't matter.
First of all, the East is a lot better this
year. But it's not the West. And I think LeBron learned that, and I'm looking at this. All I'm saying is I've made the case. Follow my lead.
What in the world was that?
I was a judge. Harden is your MVP for a second year in a row. And yes, he won't get 86 of the 100 votes that he got a year ago, but he'll get enough to win this going away. It's all about Harden. I rest my case.
All right, your turn to weigh in. Oh, he gets clapping? I didn't get clapping. Why didn't I get clapping? Did you go in there early and beg for clapping?
My stuff is good.
Alex,
that's
when
why.
I'm done, put the clapping
no,
on.
No, I didn't tell Alex anything.
All right.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, we're going to welcome in FS1 NBA partner, analyst, color analyst for March Madness, and former NBA
great
Jim Jackson.
Yeah, we've been seeing him on CBS.
Jackson, what's up, man?
What's up, Jim?
Just chilling. You know, another day at the office.
Just chilling, working hard. We see you everywhere, man. You working.
All right.
I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Hey, it's always good to be working.
To relax.
Yes, working is good.
All right, man. Look, we start off the show. There's a big game in the NBA tonight. Houston, Milwaukee. Obviously, the two leading MVP candidates. I got Giannis. Rob's got Harden. Who you got for the MVP right now?
Honestly, it's Harden. But and here's the reason why I say it is that it's not a slight towards one or the other. Both have outstanding years.
Right.
I think what Giannis has been able to do with Milwaukee, and typically I would say best record, you know, coach of the year, player of the year, MVP. But what Harden has been able to do with less and win games, guys, you know this. Guys can put up numbers, but they can be empty. The numbers that Harden put up, it brought W's. It brought wins. So to me, from a most valuable player perspective, Milwaukee can still probably win some games and maybe not be in first place, but still be relevant and still be right there in the Eastern Conference. James Harden, he elevated that team from the bottom of, you know, from a playoff perspective, where Houston was at to now third. I mean, that says a lot. And those weren't empty points.
But
you know
why,
what I mean?
So Jim, were they at the bottom? He was there when they fell to, you know, 11-14, 4-7, and all that. Like,
well, it's a lot of factors that go on early in the season when guys are not gelling, things are not right. I can't answer that question why, but I do know this. I do know when they got time for him to turn up, for the ball to be in his hand, to win games, to get them relevant. He stepped up. Like, again, we can argue both ways who deserves
right.
what.
It's real close.
It's so close because I love Giannis. I mean, I love what he's been able to do. But I'm going to just give that slight edge to Harden just by how he's been able to position the Rockets when we kind of thought they were dead in the water.
Man, I feel like a 15-year NBA vet because that's exactly what I said the first time in my life.
Chris said. I know what Chris said. Chris said Giannis.
Yeah,
he said Giannis.
And
right. I pick Harden,
reasons,
and my
Jim.
Reason was like yours, Jim, about winning and not empty numbers. And this was my argument about LeBron's 27-8-8 that everybody's talking about. Those numbers are empty because they didn't work into wins. Where Harden had to score every point he did to get them to win games.
My main reason, Jim, because I'm not going to be mad if Harden wins it. But Giannis, when they're this close offensively, I have to look at the defensive end. And Giannis is arguably the best defensive player in the league. He's number two in defensive ranking individually. And you know, he's number one in defensive rating, number two in defensive win shares. His team is the best defensive team in the league. And then I think that I give him credit for not letting Milwaukee fall into a hole. Like, they've been great the whole 5 months. Harden was there. He was there when Houston fell into that hole. So
yeah, but there were injuries, too. Let's act like they weren't injuries.
Not when they were 13-14.
No, but there were injuries
during
that.
Chris Paul got hurt at that time, and Capella was healthy, too.
I'm talking about but during that time when they could have fell apart.
There were injuries during the run when he scored 30 points every game. But early in the season, I'm not going to punish Giannis because he didn't let his team fall into a hole.
Okay, valid point. And I knew the other part was going to come up about
the defense. Right?
I knew it. I couldn't wait for you to say that. So, you remember a guy that won it back-to-back? MVPs over Nash. Point guard?
Yes.
Yep.
Did he impact the game defensively?
No.
Thank you, Jim Jackson.
Wait. So if you want to use that criteria in regards to why, I can point to Steve Nash, who I play with, that we had to hide, that from a defense, he didn't impact the game from that perspective.
He was actually a very underrated defender, y'all.
Hold up. Hey, Chris. We put Joe Johnson on the toughest point guard because we knew that Steve was a liability. Now,
well,
is
Steph
there another
too.
Guy?
We can say that about Steph.
We can say the same. That's what I was going to say. So,
Wait, Chris.
We can pick and choose when it gets down to the minute details. Like, okay, well, Giannis is a better defensive player. Yes, he is. But when we look at it, Steve Nash and Steph Curry were liabilities on the defensive end, but yet and still they won an MVP. See, back to back.
I feel you. But I'm just saying.
We rushed our case.
When is that close? Like I don't know. Nobody was like Harden was close to Steph when he won his first one, but neither one of them defended. You know, and I mean, this is one where Giannis is 27-12-6. That's only been done once by Oscar Robertson, one time the year he averaged a triple-double.
Yeah, but there were only four teams in the NBA back then.
So, I mean.
Actually, it was only nine back then.
You know that.
It's nip and tuck. I'm not going to be mad if Harden gets it. But
let me explain this. I'm envious. I wish I could have put up numbers that been in the discussion of being an MVP. So I'm not mad at either one of them.
I feel you.
Hey, let's switch over to college basketball. Is a win like Duke got the other day, because I look at it as like it could propel them to the championship because they dodged such a bullet, and they also realized how close they were for being put out. Is that something you could look at and use as a motivation as you go forward that you're still alive and you were barely alive and you know you got to come to play the next game?
Yeah. No, you know, with Coach K and I think that team being so young, they probably – well, in the tournament too, because, guys, you know this. It's a one-game scenario. It could be a 3 to 5 minute stretch that you're not playing well. The other team then begins to get confidence. I mean, UCF is a very good team in AAC all year. So it's not like these guys couldn't play. And Johnny Dawkins is very familiar with some of the thought process and strategies of Coach K. So a lot of that went into it. And it can, because propel a team to focus a little bit more on the little things. Because throughout the course of the game, if you go back and look at 5, 6, 7 plays that probably impacted the game from a Duke perspective that allowed UCF to kind of either gain momentum, take the lead, or whatever it may be. Those are the things that Coach K will look at and say, listen, guys, throughout the course of 40 minutes, we're not going to be perfect, but we got to eliminate having empty possessions. We can't turn the ball over in this scenario. Defensively, we have to get better and concentrate and talk here. All those things occur when you have a close game against a really good team. So, yeah, I mean, it's a scare, but that's the beauty of the NCAA, especially in the early rounds. All the pressure was more so on Duke to win, not on UCF. And as the game gets closer and gets near the end of the game, I mean, all the pressure shifts on the team that's supposed to win.
Jim, great stuff, man.
I wish
we could keep you longer. You know how this works, though.
Well, we're up
hey,
against
man,
it.
Anytime, man. Come on. Give me – hey, Rob, yes. Way to go, man. We set our point, Rob.
We're on there. No doubt about it.
We put some chicken wings on it.
No doubt. All right?
Oh, you got some chicken wings?
I'll jump in on that one.
All right,
I got Giannis. I'm an official voter, too.
All right, let's do it.
I'm going to have one at least for Giannis.
That's all right. That ain't going to be enough. All right, Jim. Thank you, Jim. Thanks.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker. Weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.
Paul Pierce is at it again, Rob.
That's the best way to put it. And you know what, Chris? I'm going to be the first one to say, I love when players jump on this side. You know, first of all, they hate us until they retire. Then
right.
They need something
then
to do.
Then they want to do it right.
Then they want to be analysts and reporters, and they interview each other and act like they went to J school. And they know, I'm just telling you, when you're watching this stuff and you got some former player sitting against another player and they're going, yeah, well, asking these questions or whatever. You know what I mean? Somebody wrote this stuff for them. They didn't go to J school, whatever. And a lot of times, most of them have nothing to say. Most, not all. There's some really good ones, but most have nothing to say. They're too busy. They're in bed with the other former players. They're attached to them because of agents, friends. There's all kinds of stuff. So you sit there and you're not getting the real stuff. So I'm not going to knock Paul Pierce for at least,
I agree,
stepping out and not doing the yeah, everybody's great kind of commentary, which is what we normally get, Chris, right?
I agree. He makes some outlandish statements.
Right, he does.
But I applaud him for being willing to say something.
Right, because a lot of guys don't say anything.
Right, right. I'm with you. I have a funny Paul Pierce story. When he, after the year after they won the championship in 2000, what was that, eight? He had come out and said he's the best player in the world. And
was that outlandish back then too, huh?
Yeah, because so, I said my next, I wasn't tweeting back then, but I said on radio or somewhere, TV, that I don't even think he's in the top 10.
Oh.
And he
called?
I keep wanting to say tweeted. He texted me or emailed me something. You're not even in my top 10 local sports writers.
Wow. You're like, first of all,
I'm not even local.
I'm national.
Right, right. But I like that about Pierce, and I joke with him about that when I see him. I've told him, I've been like, look, you used to get mad at me for saying stuff. Now you saying stuff about players, and he gets it. But I'm with you. Even though I don't agree with a lot of stuff he says, I like that he'll come out and say what
I do,
mind.
Really. And that's why Charles, you can say whatever you want.
Right.
That's why Charles Barkley's a star on television.
Yep.
Because, and even, I, you know what? He can get away with it. Most guys can.
And a lot of players have gotten mad at him.
Oh, there's no doubt. Oh, yeah.
LeBron,
they've all. Yeah. Remember, LeBron went personal on Charles about his gambling and all that kind of stuff. He put it out there. And you can't be that personal, get caught up. That's his job. And even Charles, the one to me is my favorite of all, is at one point a couple of years ago, the NBA just going through, you know, some bad teams early on in the season. And he said, the league's unwatchable. Like, I just cannot. There's not too many people work in concert with the league who could say that and get away with it.
Right.
But that's what he said. So here's my point. Paul Pierce, I love that you're willing to step out there, but reel it back in. And do we have what he said? Or do we just have to call?
We just got the tweet.
The
he tweeted. This is what he tweeted yesterday afternoon. It was yesterday because what's the day? It was the 24th. So two days ago. He said, here's a hot take. It's actually here a hot take for you.
Well, you shouldn't. If you have to put that out there, then that don't mention that it's a hot take. Just make it.
Zion Williams. He actually said Zion Williams. Is already a top 50 current basketball player in the world. That's his hot hashtag facts. And then his follow-up tweet was, or better. First of all, it's Zion Williamson.
Can you get the name right? Come on, man. You lose points as
no question.
If you don't even know how to name
a real debate, serious,
you're done.
We're done with you.
You're done.
Yeah.
You don't even know the guy's name. And it's not the same, Williamson and Williams. What are you doing? You know that?
Rob Parker.
Come on, man.
Oh, that was funny.
That's not good.
Zion Williams is already a top.
Unbelievable. Come on.
And even
Kawhi left.
Hashtag facts.
I think he misremembers.
Hashtag facts.
And did he have FAX? No, he doesn't, does he?
No.
Oh, I was going to say.
He did spell facts.
And then he put FAX. You know, like, no.
But look. When I first heard this, Rob, because I didn't see the tweet, I heard it. My first thought was, what? This is ridiculous. But as I thought about it over time, he's probably right. He's probably right. I mean, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. Are there 49 players in the league that are going to be better than him next year? I could see Zion stepping into the league and averaging close to 20, if not 20 points a game. So I think Pierce, as crazy as it seems, is really not even giving you that much love. If he had said top 20, then that would have really been saying something. But top 50, you don't think he's in the top 50? I know he's not a sure thing.
No, he's not in the top 50.
I mean, there's really.
Nope.
I say yes.
I say he's not. He hasn't played against that competition yet.
I get
that. And a lot of guys in college are also Rams who are just fodder for the best players who are head and shoulders above. And until he's really tested there and we see how he plays, I don't believe that you could put him in that without seeing where he's played with.
Well,
we
don't know. I mean, and we won't know until next year. And even then, if you want, you'll be able to argue, unless he just takes the league by storm, that he wasn't top 50 at this very moment. However, I get where you're coming from. He's not playing against that level of competition.
There's not enough of those guys. When you get to the NBA, even the scrubs and the eighth and ninth man were some great players somewhere in college. They all are.
Yeah, but this guy has shown some tremendous ability. When LeBron James was a senior in high school, he was good enough to do damage in the NBA. Don't you think?
Who, me?
I'm not going there. I think this is the hype has just gone through the roof.
Yeah, but the dude is bad. Like, you're not sold on what percent? I'll leave a little wiggle room just in case, because we've seen great players just not pan out in the NBA. But I'm like 95% sure this dude's going to be a stud in the NBA. What's your percentage?
I'd say 85.
Okay, so you're
which
still
is
high.
Yeah, real high.
I mean, I get you. You want to be logical this time
because I've seen
Pierce stole your rant, hot take.
I've seen so many people, and you know what? I just looked up a tweet from Paul Pierce back in 2001, and he said, "Kwame Brown is a top 50 player of all time right now."
Kawhi didn't even like that.
Nope.
I'll give you a pity chuckle.
But my point is, he was supposed to be the first overall pick in 2001. All I'm saying is slow down with always being the prisoner of the moment. He's the greatest thing since they sliced bread.
But sometimes prisoner of the moment.
It is
sometimes
prisoner of the moment.
You can analyze and see the dude is the truth.
I'm not there yet all the way.
What doesn't he do?
He's not even a horrible shooter.
Jay isn't awesome, but it's not bad.
It's not that. I haven't seen him against other competition on his level or better. That's the only difference.
It's not about him as a player. But
I want to see against other competition before I'm ready to do that. You know that everybody's game doesn't translate.
Against other competition, you would not give him love.
That's
just
not
like
true.
You don't give Patrick Mahomes love.
You're gonna owe me food next year. I'm not gonna owe you food.
He's gonna throw 40 plus touchdowns.
No, he ain't. He won't. It'll be under 40.
Yeah, all right. You're the only one on earth believes that. But there is such a thing as analysis. And that's all Pierce is doing. As raw and uncouth as it may be, he's giving analysis, looking at Zion's game, and projecting. There's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't mean he's a prisoner of the moment. Zion Williamson is dominating, destroying the college level. Destroying. Shooting 70%. Dropping 30 bombs on them. And what I love about him is that he doesn't have to have the ball in his hands to do it, which is so unique for this day and age. He is the truth. Now, I get where you're coming from with the logic, Rob, because we don't know. We just, he's not playing at the highest level.
That's all I'm saying. I don't want you to take
cats.
It as that I'm knocking the kid. I'm not. I just think that it's all premature. And I think sometimes we get caught up in that, and then you put these lofty expectations on these guys, and then what happens? Flop. Or things don't work out, or they don't live up to where we thought they would be. And it's not just him. There's a slew. Chris, covered this league. Yeah. There's a slew of guys who are supposed to be the next
Markelle
thing.
Fultz.
Right.
Now, I mean.
No, but he was the number one overall. What was his name? Anthony Bennett? Overall pick for the Cavaliers.
That was just a horrible pick.
No, I know it was a horrible pick, but he was the first pick in the draft.
Yeah. You can even go back, Wayman Tisdale.
We could go on and on.
He was okay, you know, pretty good.
He had a good career. That's what I'm saying.
He was supposed to be the man. But you can look at some of the things Zion does. He can handle the ball. He can pass. His explosion and size. In today's NBA, he's going to be able to get to the rim and finish, obviously. He defends with zeal and gusto. He blocks shot like the intangibles plus the tangibles. But the hype is at an all-time high. The hype, he is the most hyped player since LeBron James. Agreed?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I'm trying to think. Yeah.
The most hyped prospect since LeBron James.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
We've got Bob Clappish, the Major League Baseball writer and author of Inside the Empire, The True Power Behind the New York Yankees. That hits bookshelves today, so you definitely want to go pick that up. Bob, welcome to the iCouple.
What's up, Bob?
What's up, guys? Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I want to say this really quickly because I don't want to cut into your time. But when we worked together, Bob and I, at the Daily News in New York, Bob is one of the best baseball writers I ever read, and you know how much I love baseball. So much so, Bob, when I left and went to Cincinnati, you know I stole some of your style because I thought it was so good on how you covered baseball, for real.
Well, the bill, I still have to send you a bill for that, but that's okay, Rob.
No, it's real, all true, Bob. You're a great baseball writer.
No, you are. I've been covering the NBA, but I definitely read your stuff, and you do a terrific job, so we're glad to have you on. I read your story today about kind of this battle between Derek Jeter and
Brian Cashman,
right, the Yankees GM. Yeah. And tell us, it's an excerpt from the book, but tell us about that and how it led to Giancarlo Stanton trade and all that.
Well, it started all the way back in 2010 when Jeter was due to have a new contract to him. And, you know, he really wanted to make a big money. He really felt it was time to cash in. He was looking for 6 years, $150 million. And at that point in his career, he was no longer worth it. He just was on the downside. He was on the back nine of his career. And the Yankees basically did not want to bid against themselves. I mean, they tried to make him understand that, like a great actor in Hollywood, you know, at the final years of your career, you don't make the same money. Like Al Pacino right now would not command the same money for a movie as he would in his Godfather years. Jeter never really understood that, and he and Cashman never really recovered from that episode. Jeter was forced to back down. He took a lesser contract, and those hard feelings never went away. Now, fast forward to 2018, the end of last year, he's now the owner of the Marlins, and he's got to move Giancarlo Stanton. He knows that he's got to move, Stan. He's got to get rid of that contract. And Jeter still thinks it's 1998, 99, and he's the big star in the room, which was a mistake. He made two mistakes. One, he never called Stan to congratulate him when he had won the 2017 MVP award. Number two, he should have gone to Stan. Mm-hmm. No, that was wrong. That was wrong. Jeter really thought he had more star power than Stanton, and he was wrong. He was also wrong on point number two. He should have gone to Stanton and said, look, we've got to break it down here. Obviously, we're a new ownership group. We've got to cut losses. We've got to build from the ground up. We're going to have to move you, but you deserve to go where you want to go. Tell me where you want to go, and we'll try and make a deal to accommodate you. That's what Jeter should have done. Instead, he said, we're going to trade you to the Cardinals or the Giants, and if you say no, then we're going to keep you here. We're going to trade everybody around you. You're going to be stuck here for 10 years. Now, you just don't issue an ultimatum like that to your superstar, to your best player, who has earned greater respect than that. But Jeter just didn't show him enough respect. Now, Cashman is seeing this from afar. He's thinking, I can swoop in on this because New York and Los Angeles is the only place that Stanton really wants to go, and the Dodgers don't want to pay that. I can pay it. Stanton knows it, so I'm going to leverage this and steal Giancarlo Stanton from Jeter because he alienated him. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what happened. Stanton went to the New York. Stanton went to the Yankees. The Marlins ended up paying $30 million of that contract. And they got in return from the Yankees a couple of minor leaguers who may never make it to the big time. I thought it was a beautiful heist on Cashman's part and really speaks to what a tough negotiator he really is.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, Bob. I mean, Cashman has survived for a long time. He was Bob Watson's assistant. And right. When Bob Watson moved on, he came into the job. And it's incredible when you really think about how long he's lasted in New York compared to other GMs. What is it about him that has allowed him to survive, you know, during the George Steinbrenner era when he was alive and even post-George Steinbrenner.
Well, you have to understand the thing about Bryant. He survived because he has no ego. Every general manager who's come to work for the Yankees thinking, well, I'll change George. I'll tame George. I'll teach him how things are done. And ultimately, every single guy crashes and burns and is fired and is out the door bringing the next guy who says the exact same thing. Cashman knew better. He does not have an ego. As we say in the book, he prefers to be in the back of the press box instead of front of it. You know, he does not really want to be in front of the camera. He does not like being interviewed. And, he's been overshadowed because of that. He's been overshadowed since 1998 by, think about it, Joe Torre, by Alex Rodriguez, by Derek Jeter, by George Steinbrenner. Those are the guys that always got the headlines in New York. Cashman never had his true story told. So last January, after the Yankees had that terrific 2017 finish, they finished within a game of the World Series. Then they acquire Stanton. Suddenly, there's a great buzz about this team, an enormous buzz. The Yankees sold 500,000 tickets in January of 2018. So I went to Brian, and I said, look, man, nobody has told your story. It's about time somebody realized who was the real architect of this team and has changed the way the Yankees do business. It's you, and it's never been told. And it took some persuading. It really took a little arm twisting for Brian to get past his own modesty, but he finally said yes. And that's how this book was launched.
I was going to say, you got some great access, and I've been reading a little bit. I just started reading it, and it's pretty impressive how deep you get into the front office.
Well, that's a big part of it, Rob. I mean, look, I told everybody. I told the players in the clubhouse last year in spring training. I told Aaron Boone, the manager. I said, you see that pack of reporters over there on the other side of the room, that those 20 guys clustered around the locker trying to beat the next deadline? I said, that used to be me. That was me at the New York Post. That was me at the Daily News. It was me at the Bergen Record. It was me at USA Today. But that's not me this year. This year I'm an author. I'm not a newspaper reporter. And you don't have to worry about what you say ending up in the back page of the News or the Post tomorrow morning. And you don't have to worry about what you say ending up on Twitter in 15 minutes. I'm writing for 7 months from now. I'm doing a book. I'm not writing a 700-word column. And that really allowed them to let their guard down and talk to me, and talk to me in a way that they don't to beat guys. And I got so many little news nuggets and profiles and the real story, the deep tissue matter from this team that you would not find in a newspaper and you won't find on a blog or a website. And that's why this book is such a gem, because there's nothing out there like it. You've never read stuff about the Yankees like this book.
Bob, we got about a minute left. We've seen these huge contracts signed in the last few weeks, Mike Trout and Bryce Harper and so on and so forth. Aaron Judge, now I know, we know he's not eligible right now, but he's going to be playing for about $600,000 this year. Arguably the face of Major League Baseball.
One of.
Do you think this will cause any problem with him? And how do you think this ends in the future? Because I know he's going to be a little older when he's eligible to get the big money.
Well, Chris, I don't think he's going to get that close to free agency. I think the Yankees realize, like you said, he is the face. If he's not the face of baseball yet, he's absolutely the face of the Yankees.
No
doubt. He's a leader in that clubhouse. Believe me, I've seen it. I've been covering baseball long enough to remember what Keith Hernandez did for the Mets in the late 80s. He has that quality to make players better just by the way he talks, the way he acts, the way he carries himself. Judge has that. And he's a leader. He's going to be the captain of that team eventually. I think the Yankees are going to pay him big money, if not this year, then next year. He's not going to get anywhere near free agency. They see the Yankees are not stupid about money. You know, they're not cheap, and they realize where the trend is now to lock up their stars and keep them away from the open market. Judge is going to get paid. There's no question.
Bob, how can people buy your book?
Go to Amazon, Amazon.com. Go to BarnesandNoble.com or any bookstore. It's on sale right now, and it's selling pretty good.
All right. It's Inside the Empire, the true power behind the New York Yankees. Bob Clappers. Bob, great stuff. We appreciate it.
Hey, Bob, last thing real quick. Here's the thing I stole from you the most. Whenever he talked about a guy's pitching ERA being big or a big number, he would always call it chubby. He would say Sanso had a chubby 4.5 to ERA. I stole that, Bob. I'm telling
you. Well, I'm stealing it back from you because I'm still using it.
That's great. All right, bud. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Guys.
All right.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Excited to bring in our next guest. Perfect time to have him with the breaking news in the NFL. He's a CBS Sports NFL insider. Does a great job with them. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason LaCanfor, LaCanfora. Jason LaCanfor, welcome to the iCouple,
buddy. What's up, Jason?
What's going on, guys? How you doing? And greetings from Phoenix, Arizona.
And I was going to say, before he became this big NFL guru, he was the Red Wings beat writer back in the day in Detroit, right, Jason?
I was. I had a great time in the D. A lot of good friends there, and always loved getting back there. But yep. Cut my teeth there.
He did. He worked for the Freak back then.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
But,
all right.
Yeah, some changes in the NFL. Help us out. What happened? Why are we here? Is this all because of Sean Payton?
Yeah, it is.
What happened?
The NFC Championship game, and specifically the blown pass interference call there. I mean, it was more like a bowling or an assault than it was a football play. And Sean Payton, to his credit, tried to turn what for him was probably the worst moment of his career, or one of them, one of the toughest to digest, into something that at least he views as a positive. And you know what? Today, 31 owners agreed to him. And it took some unconventional action. You know, this wasn't – Sean Payton's on the competition committee. And usually the competition committee is the driving force between a lot of change, certainly replay and officiating change in the NFL. They didn't even recommend this themselves formally at the start of these meetings. Yet 48 hours later, the entire league is something that's a bit of a Pandora's box. You can now review a non-call. You know, the standard always was, well, wait, we can't go back in time. And, you know, if it wasn't called at all on the field, then we're not going to legislate it up in the replay booth. Well, we're doing that now, at least for offensive and defensive pass interference. And judging by some of the people I talked to privately coming out of this meeting, the assumption is that this goes relatively smoothly. It's going to continue to expand and maybe ultimately to a point where Bill Belichick gets his way and everything's reviewable. It doesn't mean that everything will be reviewed, because coaches are only going to have a set number of replay opportunities, right, you know, a set number of flags. But we are tiptoeing towards that, gentlemen.
That, Jason, that's the point that I made to Chris, that if we could see an obvious holding call, right, where the game-winning touchdown was thrown, why can't that be reviewed if we're looking at videotape at some point?
Well, I think if this doesn't add, you know, 15 minutes a game, and I don't think it will. I mean, they've been doing it in the CFL for a while. And let's face it, technology has advanced. There's going to be an infrastructure component to this as well. The people in New York in the officiating office, they're going to need more eyes, and they're going to need more screens, and they're going to need more 4K capability. And I think we're going to reach a point where this stuff isn't just fed directly in real time into the trucks whoever's broadcasting that game, but they want to have the ability to get it right into New York in real time. And I think if they make those investments, and this goes relatively smoothly, then I think it will be expanded to holding, and ultimately maybe eventually to a point where, hey, you got those two flags, get them both right, you get another one, use them wisely, but throw them whenever you want. You know what I mean? If you think video is the solution, go for it, but it can cost you.
Jason, bottom line, what do you think of the ruling? Do you like it? And what are most of the people around the league that you've talked to feeling about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are still just digesting it, but I like it. I mean, I sit next to a guy who knows a thing or two about football for 7 years, watching all these games, and Bill Cowher. And I've seen Bill Cowher privately two league officials right to their face say, we just got to get it right. Like, if we can see on TV what the right thing is, and we all, you know, most level-headed people will agree that is the right call based on this outcome, and we have that capability, it needs to be reflected for. No one cares for the sausage made, what we do to get there, but let's get to the point where we know what the right call is. Let's make sure that's what comes out of the official's mouth, you know what I mean, when he steps up to the microphone. And I think this is a step in that direction.
But Jason, here's my only pushback to that. Because people, even the people who are reviewing it, have made mistakes before. I've seen plenty of plays where they go to the review and they get
it
wrong.
Get it right in New York.
Am I right? I don't think that everybody thinks it's going to be this idea that it's going to be perfection and we're going to get every call right. I just, because humans are involved, I don't believe every call will be right, and people will still have an issue because human beings are involved.
Yeah, it won't be foolproof. I don't think it'll be a slam dunk. And I'll go back to this investment in infrastructure. There are people on a competition committee who feel like some of the best rules experts in the world are Gene Steratore and Plantino and Mike Pereira. And one person on that competition committee months ago made an analogy to me. Could you imagine, God forbid, you're watching a war on CNN, and the generals who were there in the studio telling people what works and what's not work are maybe better than the guy that would make the call, you know what I mean, from the command center. You know, why are some of our best and brightest minds leaving those jobs and going to these other jobs? And those are the guys who should be helping us get it right. So I think they need to reinvest. They're trying to bring some of those guys back in-house and adding more people around out with them and embracing more technology, more 4K cameras, more real-time capability to get that right into the league office and not just in the truck and then eventually to the league office. If they do all that, I think it makes things better. Is it going to make it perfect? There's no perfection. That, to your point, and it's a human element, and as many variables as there are, and as fast as the game is, that it's never going to be perfect.
Jason, Sean Payton was also talking about how these referees work, you know, part-time. They got other jobs and stuff. Do you ever see that changing? And why is the league –
NFL's cheap.
You know, yeah, why aren't these guys – it just sounds crazy that these officials are doing other jobs during the week.
Well, I think we may reach a point where, you know, the AAF, I don't want to make any sweeping statements about how successful it is or is going to be, but I think it's going to be around for a little while, and there's some smart football people involved in that. There's going to be, you know, the XFL and then the Pac-12 Developmental League. If those are somewhat viable and there's year-round reps for these guys to have, then I think there might be more guys who are willing to say, you know what, I'm not going to, you know, I don't need to still be, you know, whatever, a lawyer or have this side business. You know, there are games called year-round, and the contracts reflect that. You know, but I think they need to embrace some of that. Guys who aren't going to make it to the, you know, who aren't going to be part of the NFL at 28, 29, 30, who are incredibly fit and know all the trends, know that they're still, you know, they just stop playing the game. I think for this, you know, the NFL football ops, we've had this discussion. He and I agree that they need to
make
more
Jason,
developmental program.
We got a bad connection. Yeah, you're going in and out. So we appreciate the knowledge, man. Thanks a lot.
We appreciate it. Thanks for coming on this big story in the NFL and for breaking it down for us. Jason Lockefor from CBS. He's their NFL insider.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Odd Couple with Chris Broussard and Rob Parker, weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific.